Welcome to the Jonah Carey Podcast, friends. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today's guest is Pete Schenke. Pete, the president of RotoWire, has been for, 20-odd years now. RotoWire, one of the best places for fantasy sports analysis anywhere, by the way. I've been using them long before I knew Pete and his colleagues at RotoWire. And he is also high up in the FSTA, the Fantasy Sports Trade Association, and was a lobbyist for DFS, for Daily Fantasy Sports, for the last couple of years working on that. And it's been interesting because just recently we had a Supreme Court ruling that basically said states get to do what they want when it comes to betting on sports, legalized sports gambling. So this cross-section of DFS and legalized sports gambling right up Pete's alley. As soon as it happened, he said, hey, we should talk on the podcast. I said, yes, let us do that. So a really, really good conversation that he and I had about all that and about just kind of innovations in fantasy sports, what comes next. As I think you guys know, if you listen to this and follow all my nonsense, I am in something called the League of Leagues, which is baseball, basketball, football, all in one league, and it's cool and innovative and weird. And so we talked all about kind of what the next frontier is in fantasy sports and lots of stuff about legalized sports gambling. Lots of implications here and probably do. The corollary that I made was kind of like weed legalization was, okay, this is probably a victimless kind of situation, and if people want to make sports more interesting, then go for it. But you know, there's always the stigma, Shoeless Joe Jackson and Pete Rose and all that. So we cover the gamut here and all the implications, and a good chat with Mr. Schenke, who I've known for a long time, and I'm glad that he could be on the pod. Also glad to be on the pod is SeatGeek, friends, the longtime sponsor of the Jonah Carey Podcast. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing. There's a better way to buy tickets to sports, to concerts, to everything. It's SeatGeek, smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. I have used SeatGeek for baseball games. I have used SeatGeek for hockey games. I have used SeatGeek for concerts, and they have never failed me. It's a color-coded map, makes it super easy to use, intuitive. Hey, maybe the best place to sit in this one baseball game is behind home plate or on the upper deck or down the third baseline. Very, very easy if you use SeatGeek to figure all that good stuff out. Also very easy to use is the SeatGeek promo codes. Get this. You download the SeatGeek app and you enter the promo code Jonah today. You'll get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase, just that easy. And also, hey, maybe you already have SeatGeek, but you want to go to a baseball game. Well, SeatGeek has a special offer for all MLB purchasers, not just first timers. Use the promo code Carey, that's K-E-R-I, but you should know that, for $10 off MLB tickets. That's promo code Carey for $10 off MLB tickets, or just go ahead and use the promo code Jonah for $20 off of any first-time purchase. Thank you so much to SeatGeek, as always, for sponsoring the podcast. Some quick programming notes. CBS Sports is where you will find my writing, and also lots of stuff from CBS Sports HQ. Go to cbssports.com, and there's a big link for HQ at the bottom of the page, and that is our 24-hour streaming service, so you will hear me and see me talk about baseball multiple times a day. So check all of that out. Also, sportsnet.ca. I'm actually talking to you from Toronto, doing some TV for Sportsnet this week, so you can check that out. What's today? Wednesday? So this will come out. You could see that. And then if you happen to be in Canada, then tune in to Blue Jays Central, 6:30 p.m. this evening, Wednesday evening. And you could watch me and Joe Siddle and JB Campbell and Kevin Barker kibitz about baseball. Do all that in the sportsnet.ca. I also write about the Jays every week and sometimes baseball as a whole as well. So do that. Also, something that you should do is that you should get on Omaha Steaks. Omaha Steaks, another sponsor this week of the Jonah Carey Podcast. Father's Day right around the corner. You're thinking of a great gift idea. How about Omaha Steaks? They're terrific. All kinds of delicious stuff. Steaks, burgers, lots of great stuff. They're delicious. Ship right to your door. Cook them up. Put them on the grill. It's grilling season. Get on that. And how about this? You go to omahasteaks.com and type in the promo code Jonah in the search bar, and the discounted package will appear. Just click on that and you're good to go. And how about this? I'm going to go through some of the items that you can get with your first Omaha Steaks package. 2 tender filet mignons, 2 beefy top sirloins, 4 chicken fried steaks, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 all beef Omaha Steak burgers, 4 gourmet jumbo franks, 12 ounces of all beef meatballs, 1 pound of steakhouse fries, 4 caramel apple tartlets, 1 Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus 4 more grill-ready Omaha Steaks burgers free with purchase. That is all in one package. Just go to omahasteaks.com. Enter the promo code Jonah in the search bar to get the discount. That's omahasteaks.com. Thank you to Omaha Steaks for sponsoring the podcast. And here is the latest edition of the Jonah Carey Podcast. It is with Peter Schenke. Enjoy. So we're going to bring in an old friend and somebody who's in the news, dare I say. The news comes out that sports betting is, we think going to be legal in many states. Obviously, there are federal implications to consider and all that. But somebody I've known for a long time, he's the president of RotoWire, chairman of the Fantasy FTSA. you'll spell it out for me. And also somebody who was heavily involved in lobbying on behalf of the daily fantasy sports community. It's Pete Schenke. Pete, how are you?
Doing great.
It's good to have you on the show. You had reached out to me, actually, and said, we should talk about this thing. And I'm like, yeah, we totally should, because it's really interesting and topical. And I think that, like, even the most casual sports fans that I know, somebody's bet on something. Guaranteed. March Madness, Super Bowl, something. You know, it's definitely come up, whether or not you're a serious gambler, whether or not you play DFS, what have you. So I want to get into the whole DFS fight and everything like that, but let's kind of go backwards here. Let's start with the most recent news first, and then we'll back up and talk about the broader implications. So the news comes out, and it was Governor Chris Christie from New Jersey, former governor, who basically started this. States wanted in. Basically, there was a law in 1992 that said, okay, Nevada can have what they want, but nobody else can. And Christie said Jersey wants it. Other states were interested too. There was a case brought before the Supreme Court. And by 6-3 margin, it was decided that, you know what, states can get in on the pie as well. So tell me about kind of how this went down and what it means for, forget about the fantasy sports industry for a second, what it means for me and you and people who want to bet on sports.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was a ruling that was kind of surprising because New Jersey kept over a 9-year period, kept trying to appeal it, and then no one thought they had any chance. And then the Supreme Court kind of picked it up when nobody thought they would. And it really became kind of a state's rights issue. Mm-hmm. You can get a lot more in the detail of the legal ease, but essentially, the Congress can't tell one state that they can do something, and not all the other states that they can't. At least by the methods that they did it in this law, and it makes sense. I mean, it's like Nevada can have sports betting and everyone else can't. It'd be like if you said Wisconsin can have biotech and everyone else, couldn't, or something like that, right? So it just, it feels wrong. But they overturned it. So there's going to be sports betting in the U.S. So what does that mean? Well, it doesn't mean that everyone's going to have sports betting tomorrow. All it means is that the law that stops states from passing and enabling sports betting like Nevada is gone, and now states can do it. And there's really just been – it's kind of like the culmination of a real shift in U.S. society as far as sports betting. 30, 40 years ago, I mean, when the law was passed in 1992, most people didn't like sports betting. I have some numbers here that are pertinent, which 1974, 69% of the people in the U.S. opposed sports betting.
Wow.
Fell to 56% in 1993. So right after they passed the law, it's still – now it's almost completely flipped. 2017 – 55% are in favor of legalization of sports betting, with only 33% opposed. So the shift has really just kind of happened over time. And that's not why the Supreme Court did it, but it certainly was kind of a why New Jersey pushed it and tried to make it happen. I think they could see the trends. And meanwhile, the whole sports community, everyone around, has kind of changed. The leagues have gone from being, really opposed to it to, okay, maybe this is another way we can, make money or our sports will benefit. But what it means for you as a consumer in the U.S., now it's up to every state. Some states, you know, saw this coming and passed legislation ahead of time. Mm-hmm. As like a, you know, ready to go. So Delaware is actually next week, you know, going to have sports gambling.
Wow.
New Jersey, thereafter, they got to have figure out some rules and regulations. Pennsylvania is ready to go. They're writing the rules right now. Mississippi. So, you know, some states are just going to be right out of the gate. And I think next year, you'll see another 10 to 15 states probably get pretty far, if not pass it. You know, every state was talking about it this year. This year, there's probably, you know, 20 to 30 states where either there was a bill that got introduced or a study or legislators were talking about it. So the states, you know, see that it's popular. They look at it as a revenue source. And so it's kind of off and running.
It's fascinating stuff, and I'm really interested in the perspective of the leagues because, you know, from the view from 30,000 feet, you can sort of sit here and say, okay, you know, the NBA in particular says, cool, give us 1% of the cut, which makes a lot of sense. You know, they not even net, I believe they want of the gross of all wagers, they want 1%, which is a substantial amount, but it makes sense. You know, they're basically saying, hey, you're betting on our product. We obviously should share in it. I totally get that. That's a way for them to make money. It's kind of a no-duh situation. And yet, sports leagues had been so adamantly against it, I assume because of propriety's sake, because of the Black Sox scandal and Pete Rose and what have you. I mean, things associated more with baseball, granted, but even like the CCNY scandal of college basketball in the 50s, I believe, just stuff like that. So what was the tipping point that led leagues to say, all right, you know, gambling, oh no, won't somebody think of the children? This is dangerous. This is terrible. To cool, we're on board, give us lots of money. When did this really start to turn, and why did it start to turn?
I mean, you know, I think the general societal change, you know, has also impacted the leagues, right? And we've seen examples in like Europe, you know, like sports betting got legalized and, you know, throughout Europe and especially in Ireland and the UK, and the results there were not dramatic. You know, the leagues, you know, the EPL, there's not like major crises of integrity. You know, they don't have tremendously high rates with problem gambling. It just became kind of a normal industry. And a lot of these, you know, pro owners are over there all the time. The leagues have games over there. Some of these owners also own soccer teams. It just became, you know, so pervasive everywhere else that the US model just looked really out of whack. I don't know. They're going to benefit. The leagues are going to benefit because people who gamble more, you know, watch more games and they're more interested into stuff. And so, and you're going to get a lot of, benefits that way from people who are more interested in sports. The integrity fees and them getting the money directly from that, either through, and, you know, an integrity fee or, data licensing, like you have to use our official data. That's another thing that they're trying to do. Hmm. I don't know if they're going to necessarily get those. I think if like 5 years ago before PASPA was overturned, if they had said, hey, this is something that's really good for us, we've changed our mind, but the only way we're doing it is we're going to get this amount of money for something. I think everybody, you know, all the sportsbook operators and a lot of the local governments would have been like, hey, sure. But that cat, you know, that seems to have passed.
Yeah.
And clearly in Nevada's been around for offering single sports wagering for, you know, all these years, and there's never been an integrity fee. So,
yeah.
You know, it's hard to really argue that it's an absolutely necessary, but you know, the leagues are powerful lobbying entities, and there's examples of integrity fees in other countries, Australia, countries in Europe. So there's a model that's out there. They are going to have to bear some costs. You know, if there's more sports gambling, to do investigations and monitoring that, you know, coaches and umpires and players aren't, you know, gambling, but, is it going to be as expensive as 1% of all of the gambling in the US? I mean, most people don't think it's anywhere even in that universe. So we'll have to see how it comes down, but, you know, the leagues will benefit. They just may not get the direct money benefit. You know, they'll get all the secondary benefits, which could be humongous, right? Because, sure. I mean, it certainly could maybe, you know, the theory is thinking that for the sports leagues, you know, the sports bubble of the cable, you know, TV system is kind of breaking on them, and their, you know, the rights fees might suffer, and the viewership may go down. So maybe this replaces that and becomes the thing that keeps them going in terms of growth.
Well, and I think the secondary benefit is a great point here. I'm going to try to say this without personal bias, and I'm going to fail. I don't love football as a sport. Just as a sport, I don't think it's the most exciting sport. I don't know how to say that objectively because obviously it's an opinion, but I just don't feel that way. I think you can make a case for basketball. You know, obviously hockey's very fast-paced, whatever you want to say. But football
is a gambling juggernaut, you know, between the point spreads, between fantasy, between all that. And I wonder if that's the big secondary benefit. If it becomes, and granted, baseball is more difficult to bet on because you don't have point spreads in the same way or whatever. But if it becomes the kind of thing where sports, people could just consume sports more because gambling could become really easy. That if you have kiosk gambling, maybe eventually you can gamble on your phone and all that. Then this random Astros Twins game, you'll be like, oh my God, like what's going to happen with Keuchel in this game? I got $500 on this thing. Well, maybe not 500 if you're a casual gambler, $10, whatever it is. You know, it feels like that might be the big thing because the NFL is the one league, other than soccer, of course, but I mean, among the big four North American leagues that really broke through in that way in gambling. And maybe that's what particularly the NBA is banking on. I know the NBA has been a big backer here, but, you know, maybe hockey and baseball too, where the thought is, okay, we're going to start to achieve benefits where people who might not even be big baseball fans or basketball fans are going to jump on board because, hey, this Sacramento Utah game super matters because I got money on it. I mean, do you buy that? Do you think that there could just interest in sports in general will grow because now people can put some skin in the game?
I mean, it's definitely a benefit. I mean, if you look at the surveys, you know, the people that gamble on sports watch more TV and consume more of the product. So it could be like that. I'm actually more excited for the stuff that'll come with entrepreneurs. You know, it's always been kind of, you know, a lot of people's dream to create the next, you know, gambling product, you know, whether it's a hybrid with fantasy or office pools or whatever. And, you know, I look at the creativity that's come in fantasy sports and just sports, you know, media and sports data over the last 10 years and, you know, what could come next. I mean, I mean, sports betting, at least in terms of Las Vegas and stuff, has been pretty static for like the last 20 years, right? You make a, you know, you bet the point spread, you bet the over under, you bet the money line. That's about it, right? Yep. It's pretty hard to find like prop bets in Vegas. You can, I mean, but not for like every game and everything. And I just think there hasn't been a lot of innovation. And I think that I think it's one of the reasons is because in the traditional Vegas, you know, product mix, sports betting is actually like really small. I mean, it's like I looked, so in 2017, sports betting was only $248 million of their net winnings in Nevada. And that's like the smallest. I mean, penny slots is the biggest at $3.1 billion. Wow. Blackjack, $1.2 billion.
Yeah.
So, you know, the table games are what makes them the money. And so the sports book was just this thing in the side that would get people in the door every once in a while. And maybe for like the tournament, the NCAA tournament or something like that, but it wasn't a big money maker. And I think if you have companies, you know, that are focusing on that alone in the US, I think you'll come up with a whole bunch of new ideas. And then you have, you know, all fantasy sports and other sports media and the internet and all the innovation that comes from the U.S. and Silicon Valley. And, I'm just excited to see, like, what's next. Because you and I could probably, it's like the League of Leagues, you know, like,
oh, yes.
That on, you know, that's with lots of options and money on the line. You and I could probably think of about, you know, 20 great ideas like that and have fun on. And I think there'll be some entrepreneurs that are out there going to put that into place.
Perfect. Call me a consultant. Give me 2% of it and I'll just sit on the sidelines. You come up with the ideas. We'll do that. I want to ask you, somewhat related, but I want to ask you about something you've been doing for the last couple of years. I mean, you, along with, you know, Chris Liss and Jeff Erickson and Herb and all those guys, Schuler, all those guys, started RotoWire. Geez, this is like 20 years ago, and it's been a very successful business. And one of the things that's happened in recent years is that RotoWire, which has provided fantastic analysis. Before I knew any of you guys, I was reading the hell out of RotoWire. For years and years, and then Daily Fantasy Sports came along, and then your business model was just perfect for that, because then it became, oh, the backup second baseman for the Twins is going to start today. It's a left-hander. Dude can't do anything. He's fat and slow, but man, he hits lots of homers against lefties. You can put this guy in your lineup. That became the kind of indispensable information that you could really use if you were using DraftKings or FanDuel. And what you've done, in addition to your title with RotoWire and FTSA, is you became a lobbyist for 2 years on behalf of DFS and on behalf of that legal fight. So we'll kind of sort of backtrack and slide to the side a little bit. First, take people through the legal battles that occurred with Daily Fantasy Sports, because it's a really fun product. It's a very simple and cool idea. But man, that almost went off the rails. There was a lot of objections. There was a lot of kind of, you know, fears of, for lack of a better term, insider trading. And you know, DFS seemed to come out well on the other side. And I would assume that the recent decision with gambling in general can't hurt anyway the landscape which DFS now lives in.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a crazy 3 years. I mean, 3 years ago, you know, I'm the chairman of the FSTA, and I'm the only person that does the lobbying because it really wasn't a big deal. Yeah. Most people viewed fantasy sports as game of skill, legal. Every once in a while, what would happen in the 2000s was somebody would get fired at their job for playing fantasy sports for money, right? So yeah. There were a couple cases where they're probably going to fire the guy anyway. So as a pretext, they fired him because, you know, there's an email that said he, you know, entered a $20, $50 fantasy football league.
Yeah.
And so we were like, well, that's ridiculous, you know. And so some of these states, an opportunity came up in 2011 in Maryland where somebody wanted to win a prize there and they couldn't win it from some company because they didn't think the law was clear. So some legislator there said, oh, you know, let's pass a law. And so I got involved and I helped, you know, facilitate, you know, get behind it and hire lobbyists and the law passed. And, you know, fast forward like 5 years later, daily fantasy sports has just taken off. Mm-hmm. FanDuel and DraftKings spend, you know, $500 million in about a year and a half on advertising, which just made our industry famous. You know, suddenly we're talked about and we were a topic in the Republican presidential debate. Mm-hmm. You know, is daily fantasy sports gambling? Oh, that was crazy. And everyone just wanted to jump in front of that spotlight for their issue. And suddenly, you know, we were under attack left and right. And, you know, I was the only guy with any experience or in trying to coordinate this whole effort to try to, you know, pass laws to help us and testify in front of state legislatures and Congress. We succeeded, you know, over a 2 year period. Now there's been 18 states that have passed laws that have clarified that daily fantasy sports are not gambling and they're legal. There's two other states to pass laws that are contingent on a voter referendum in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. and some tribal gaming in Connecticut. The tribes have to approve. We'll see if they do. So we've, you know, come a long way. And during that time, I mean, it was, you know, the magnitude of all the advertising made it so that all these politicians came out and said, oh my God, this is an end around gambling. What is fantasy sports? It was just DraftKings and FanDuel. It was just invented like last year. This is totally crazy. And they didn't really, you know the issue or study anything. And it got a bunch of attention. And Schneiderman, the New York Attorney General, mm-hmm. Was the most aggressive. And it got him a lot of PR. The first day he came out and bashed FanDuel and DraftKings, he was on all the morning shows, CBS, NBC. And you know, that was a battle. He was going to shut down FanDuel and DraftKings. But luckily, we went to the state legislature in New York and lobbied them hard. And they passed a law that, you know, clarified it wasn't gambling, and they taxed the industry and put in some consumer protections. And that law has been going for 2 years, and it's been working out pretty well as far as, you know, the industry is making money, and there haven't been any, you know, major consumer complaints. So it's worked out pretty well. So then all that happened, and I got involved in that. And really, I would say coincidentally, this court case from New Jersey was kind of going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then the Supreme Court surprisingly picked it up and it passed. And I think a lot of people's natural assumption is like, oh, this is just the progression, right? Oh, you know, and a lot of people will ask me, oh, you must be really excited. You've been working for this for like 2 years. And it's like, well, no, actually I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, right.
And so, I mean, it just sort of happened, right? Even, you know, FanDuel, DraftKings, none of them were lobbying for it. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people in the fantasy sports industry are happy to see it, but, you know, we just wanted to, you know, have fantasy sports be left alone and just, you know, be able to operate. And so, you know, I'm not really like, you know, big pro gambling guy. I mean, sure, you know, I mean, and I'm sure a lot of the companies in our industry are going to take advantage of it, but it was never my cause, you know? So yeah. Some people are like, oh, you know, or you should be really excited. You know, you did such great work, or this is your thing. And it's like, well, not really. And so like to your point, you know, last point was, well, doesn't this just get us out of the woods and clear everything up and now it's all legal? Yeah, I mean, a little bit of the existential threat is gone because, you know, a state could say, oh, it is gambling and it's legal. But what that does, and this happened in the state of New York, the state of Nevada gets a little complicated, is they just lumped daily fantasy sports and fantasy sports into the same law as gambling.
Huh.
And then it's regulated the same way as gambling, which is really expensive, right?
Yes. I mean,
you get a gambling license in Nevada, it's like, you know, millions of dollars of just of entry fees and legal fees and, you know, a lot of time to go through the whole process, you know, and if you're trying to do that for, fantasy football game, you know, like a season long fantasy football game that might make a couple million dollars and create, you know, have a small business. Well, that doesn't work. And even for the daily fantasy sports companies, you know, for like a FanDuel and DraftKings or someone the equivalent that's just going to do daily fantasy sports, that doesn't work either. So that's the real risk going forward for the fantasy industry, is that we just, you know, now everyone just says, ah, it's all gambling, put it all together and you get lumped in there. Well, that's going to be really tough on the fantasy products, the paid fantasy sports contests, if they have to go through all that, all of those costs and regulations, like a brick and mortar casino that offers, you know, a window where you can do sports betting and has crafts and poker and everything else.
I want to talk, I'm going to go back to DFS for a second. You talked about the consumer protections. Two of the biggest, whatever, cited concerns, criticisms, what have you. One was, if you worked for FanDuel, it was established that you couldn't bet on FanDuel, but you would have a few rogue agents who would be working for FanDuel and would bet on DraftKings platform and vice versa. And it seemed like they had the edge because they sort of figured out how to crack the system. The other one was bots that, you know, you're okay, you're a guy and you want to bet on hockey tonight and that's fine, but somebody else can bet 1,000 hockey tickets at the same time. And so they might gain an edge over you in some way. Where do we stand on those issues? Are they even issues in the DFS world? Should, you know, if I'm a guy and I just want to get in there, is this game rigged against me as a novice, or do I really have a shot here?
Well, first of all, it's not betting, right? It's entry fees, right?
Yeah, right, so, right, exactly.
So I got to, you know, I always got to talk that one. But I mean, that's part of the battle that we had really in general, was that the colloquial expression is betting, right?
Yes,
but
right.
The legal definition is different. The legal definition is, if there's more skill than luck, then it's considered, it's not betting. And so it's not under all these rules. And so that's really hard to explain, because, you know, if I'm going to play you in pickup basketball right now, I'll bet you $10, I win. Of course, I wouldn't bet, because you actually are pretty, you're a way better basketball player than me. I'm terrible. You trust me, you're way better. I've seen you play before. You're better than me. But you know, that's the expression. But you know, that's not the way it works. Legally, it's different, right? So anyway, so that aside, I mean, yeah, there were a couple issues. You know, the two of the issues. One was the scripting issue, which was really what happened is, in the early days of DFS, before the sites got a lot more technologically advanced, you weren't able to change your lineups all at once. So like, you know, you put in like 20 entries and suddenly, you know, some guys scratched the last second, you know, to go through and, you know, change all your 20 lineups. It was like this chore, right? To have to go through there and like flip it all. So these smart programmers wrote some script where they could like, you know, massively input them all at the same time. So that gave like a huge edge.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, there was a lot of pressure on the companies and they changed and they got put into all these laws. So all these laws mandate that, you know, most of these state laws mandate you can't have third party scripts. So that's good. So the laws took care of that. I think that the market probably would have gotten rid of that problem, because like one of the companies, Yahoo, FanDuel, DraftKings, would have said, we don't allow that anymore. And then people would have maybe drifted to that.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, the laws took care of that. The other one, was the whole, you know, controversy, which is what kind of ignited everything in the fall of 2015, which got the New York Attorney General involved, which were the players playing on each other's sites. Really what happened there was, there was one employee for DraftKings who would write a column every week that would just show the ownership rates for the players, which is, you know, and he released it a little bit early, and, you know, later found out that he didn't do anything wrong. It was just, you know, on purpose, right, or whatever. It was just inadvertent, right?
Yeah.
Coincidentally, at the same time, he was playing on DraftKings, on FanDuel, and he won like a big tournament that weekend.
Yeah.
And so people were like, wow, he has access to this data, and so that must give him a big edge. Now, if we went back to the investigation, it turns out he didn't really, the time he entered his lineup and the time that he got this data was released, he didn't have it, didn't give him an advantage. But obviously then the perception was out there like, oh, this could happen.
Yes.
And so that became the big controversy. And so in all these state laws, that's mandated as well. The companies, you can't play for each other. And now it looks really crazy, but back then it really wasn't. I mean, if you work at Uber, you know, you can go do Lyft, right?
Yes,
you know, you can use the competition. If you work at a casino, you can go across the street and play, you know, if you're a poker dealer, you can go to the other side and play poker. So really like, and the people who were getting hired from these companies, you know, they got really good by playing the game. That's how they improved the products and became, you know, they were a consumer of their own products. And so that's how they got really good. But I think once it kind of dawned on everyone, like, oh, you know, these people are going to have data that could potentially give them an advantage on the other site. And also the products weren't that different. I mean, FanDuel and DraftKings, the products were very, you know, nuances. The differences weren't that great. So that got taken care of. And then you cited one other one, which I forget. You said the scripting.
Those are the two.
Those are the two?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the general thing is, okay, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to lose, right? So there's that whole perception of people would say, well, there's a study that came out that was a big PR negative for us, which said that only 3% of the people win 90% of the money, 97% of the money, right? And so then people would say, well, but it's that's gambling. But that's not how it works. Because, like, if it's gambling, then it's just going to be 50-50, right? And if you play poker or craps or whatever, skill. I mean, it's, you know, but if there's a skill event, then only a small number of people are going to win. If you went and played professional golf, I mean, look at the professional golf tournament. This week at the professional golf tournament, when is it, the Memorial?
Yeah.
You know, the two top three guys between the top three prizes, they're going to win like 70% of the money, right? I mean, that's just the way it works. The best guys win more. If you're in your season-long fantasy football league and you have 12 people in the league, the top two guys, the guy wins the Super Bowl and the guy wins the division, maybe those points, they're going to win like 70% of the money. That's the way it works. And so daily fantasy is really not that different. But I think that, you know, there's other ways you can play too. So if you're, you know, if you're just scared of that, you don't want to play with the sharks, so to speak, and you don't want to play against the best in the world, because you can if there's the million dollar maker this week on DraftKings for football or golf or whatever, and you want to go against the best, you want to go against the Tiger Woods, the Mike Trouts of DFS, you can do it. And it doesn't cost you that much. It costs you $2,500. But if you want to do that and you just want to play to have fun and you don't want to play against so much experts, play for a dollar, you know, play head to head, play some smaller tournament. And one of the things that the laws did and the market did was to have the DFS companies create a whole bunch of like beginner games and low stakes games and make sure that the higher stake players, the guys who play more, you know, are not in those low games. And so I think that's given people more choices. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, one of the battles we constantly have are people are like, you know, this is gambling. And it's like, well, it's not gambling if the people who try harder, you know, and know more win more consistently. That's called skill.
Yes.
you know, and so that was one of the battles that we, and if you look at all the studies and things like that, I think that's one of the things that helped us pass the laws were that kind of came out. And then also we just had a tremendous amount of, you know, fans, people played the games who contacted their legislators, and that made a big difference.
I can remember when the 49ers stadium opened and they were talking about how tech advanced it was going to be and every seat would be wired, da, 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 da. And this isn't what they meant, but in my mind, I'm like, oh, cool. Like, so you can place bets on the games and you could do all this stuff. And that would have been really cool. And, you know, granted, everybody has a phone and you can do what you want. And I don't know that the stadiums need to be wired, but I think there's something to that. I think there's something to the idea of you're in the stadium, you're watching the 49ers play the Giants, and you can make a prop bet on whether or not Odell Beckham is going to score in the second quarter. There's something to that. Do you see a future in which sports leagues truly integrate? Not only do they get behind betting, not only do they try to reap revenue, but you can bet DFS at your seat. You know, or is it pointless because we all have a phone? I'm just wondering, like, can we get to a point where it's really just like one is indistinguishable from the other? Sports and sports betting are completely wedded in every way.
Oh, I think that's going to happen. Yeah. That's what happens in Europe. In Europe, most of the betting is done on in-game activities. So you're betting the score at halftime, you know, things like that. The technology is going to get better, the innovation. I think that, you know, I think you're going to have the ability to go to the stadium, be online when you're on your phone and, bet straight up on what's going to happen, you know, on, you know, in the game. I think that's coming. I mean, I think one of the things that the overall Supreme Court law decision did was not only did it change the law, so now that all the states can make their, create their own laws and choose their own path for sports betting, but it's just going to reduce this stigma, right? Yeah. I mean, before there's just this big stigma about gambling, right? I mean, baseball is like, you know, if you ever bet on your own team, you know, you're out your whole life. And that's good. That's a good rule.
Sure.
But then it was kind of like the same, it was sort of that same high level beyond that. I mean, gambling is terrible. It's terrible for sports. And I think that's going to be lifted. I just think the leagues are going to, you've already seen them make a big switch. And I think that'll just keep going and they'll see it as a revenue opportunity and that just won't be there. I mean, there'll be some states, you know, there definitely will be some states that probably never pass it. I think most estimates are that it'll get as high as like 35, 40. But, you know, once there's money to be made and most consumers like it and, you know, the laws aren't there, you know, then I think they'll take it to exactly that level where you're in the stadium and you're betting on, you know, you're betting on in-game action. I think that's inevitable.
I don't necessarily think this is going to happen, but I'll play devil's advocate and ask the question. You know, there was that stigma and there was the fear, founded or unfounded, that, okay, if we open the floodgates, then it's going to lead to corruption of the games, that it's going to be, you know, Rothstein in 1919 again, and that players and refs and whatever, we've seen all kinds of, you know, malfeasance, accusations of malfeasance over the years. Is there any threat, you know, now that the doors are opening more and more, the stigma's going away, the laws are changing, should we be more vigilant about the possibility of it leaking into the actual participants and officials of these games getting more involved? Or does the landscape pretty much remain the same and they could have been corrupt before and they can be corrupt now and it makes no difference?
I mean, that's one of the big arguments for legalizing and regulating it.
Okay. Because
then it's all above board, right? So yeah. Especially if it's online and it's traceable, you know, then you've got an audit trail so you can kind of know. And if you make the sports books, you know who their customers are and you know if it's, you know, an official or a player or, you know, the wife of an official or a player or right. something like that. I think the leagues like that, you know. And I think we haven't really seen that in Europe. There definitely are some sports, you know, when you get down there, like tennis has some problems. So there's definitely some sports that have more problems. And so you'll have to get that out. But I don't think so. I mean, I think the only argument to me that maybe carries a little water there is just that there might be like way more betting activity. And so just, you know, if you have a lot bigger pie of activity, then, you know, maybe there's more risk. But I just, you know, right now the estimates are there's $150 billion bet illegally in the U.S. Who knows if that's true?
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like there's not a whole lot of money. And you and I know that if you and I wanted to, whatever state we are in the whole country, if we wanted to make a sports wager bet, it wouldn't take us more than like half an hour, right? Mm. I mean, you could go online, go to some offshore account, you could go to some bar, ask for a bookie. It's just not that hard, right? I mean, it's just, you know, it's not, you know, I mean, it's more work for me to do it. I mean, I've only gambled when I've been in Vegas, right?
Right.
But it's just not that hard. So people who want to, you know, go that route, it's already widely available. So I think, you know, regulating it, getting above board, being able to track it, I think that will probably, you know, minimize that risk tremendously, I think.
It's funny because when you say all these things, if you just put, and I'm not joking, like I'm being a little flip, but not really. If you replace the word gambling with the word weed, this is exactly the same thing. Everybody did it. You could get weed, no problem. There was a stigma in some circles. Other people thought that you were batshit insane. Why would you object to somebody smoking a joint? Then suddenly a bunch of states got on board, and 50 years from now, we're going to look back on weed not being legal and maybe gambling not being legal and say, what the hell were we doing? Why was this a problem? Who cares? You're not hurting anybody. I don't know. I see this like almost perfect parallel between the two. It just seems like it's a harmless thing. So just go ahead and might as well make some money off of it if everybody's doing it.
Well, one thing was, I mean, when I did this lobbying, I was with all these states. I'd be like sitting through these hearings, all these meetings, and it would always be, the next hearing would be on, you know, marijuana.
Yeah.
There are a lot of similar parallels, definitely. I mean, you know, there's a lot of differences too, but yeah, I can see it. I can see an activity that's already out there that's taking place illegally that the government's not really doing a good job of, you know, preventing. You know, there's a case to be made for, you know, regulating it, getting above board, you know, taxing it, having a whole bunch of consumer protections. I mean, those are some strong arguments for that kind of stuff. But in sports, I think in particular, I think, and there's models, you can look at other countries. I mean, you know, it's been going on in the UK and Ireland for a long time, and, you know, they haven't fallen into the ocean and their societies have not turned upside down. So, I think things are working, you know, things work relatively the same as they did pretty much before they had sports betting.
Hmm. All right. So I want to wrap up with this. We talked about innovation in all of this, but I'm thinking about the fantasy sports world, and yes, like the League of Leagues is a cool idea and it's fun. I don't know how many hardcore people are going to play baseball, basketball, football at the same time and have to prep for the third wide receiver for the Titans at the same time as knowing who the setup man is going to be for the Orioles. I think it's just maniacs like me and 13 other people. Fine. But, What kind, I don't, obviously, if you knew the direct answer to this, you'd be a zillionaire. We wouldn't even be talking. But what kind of thing could be the next innovation down the pike in fantasy? I mean, obviously, DFS was a big breakthrough. You know, what sorts of things get you excited thinking about the fantasy industry? Because you've been in this for so long. You've seen so many things change. Where could we go from here? When we're having this conversation 5 years ago, what's the big thing that we're talking about?
I think two areas in general that I can think of is one, I used to be a financial reporter like you, right?
That's
where you got started. So I used to cover the futures and options markets. And I'm like, well, I want all that stuff. If I'm playing, DFS or I have my season long league and I have Kershaw like tonight and, he's going, I want to go in and hedge, I want to, take options on him. I want to, figure out, okay, well, if he gets to the sixth inning and he has scoreless, I want to be able to benefit and I want to, or, halfway through his outing, I want to be able to, offset some of my risk and sell that future share or whatever it is. So I think you'll see a lot of that. And that's kind of a marriage between gambling and DFS and that kind of stuff that I think can happen.
And Wall Street, really?
Yeah. I mean, you kind of get into securities law at some point that kind of goes over. That's why there's never been a great, everyone has this idea that it doesn't work. It's the fantasy sports stock market.
Well, right? I remember Wall Street Sports. I used to screw around with that all the time.
Oh, it's great.
It was built for you and I.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But the problem was, is that eventually it just got to be this ridiculous popularity contest, right? Because there's no correlation between the athlete and his actual statistics.
Jeremy Lin in that world would have been worth $20 bazillion.
Yeah, right. But they couldn't do that because as soon as you tied it to his actual like earnings on the field, then it's a security, and then that's a no-no with the government, and so it's really hard to make a game like that, right? So there's definitely some areas where they can't go, but you'll probably be able to get somewhat close. And the other one is just like the office pool, times 10, right? I mean the NCAA tournament pool. It's the best, right? You're playing, you got $20, you got this huge pool of people, you win. What are they going to be able to do with that? If you were able to kind of have a similar structure for fantasy or whatever, or something like that, where, you just were able to put together a big pool of people across the country so that, you and I are watching, some obscure baseball game. But we're in some pool with like thousands of other people or something like that, you get that benefit of putting a little bit of money down and winning a lot of money, which doesn't really exist in sports betting. I mean, that's one of the competitive advantages for daily fantasy sports is that you can even people are always like, well, this is the end of daily fantasy sports, but not really. I mean, it's a skill game. People overall society, especially younger people, like games that have more skill in them. The gambling games that have less skill, like slots and stuff like that, are declining. They're looking at how to put like slot machines on the floors of Vegas that have like some gaming aspect, like video games. So I think that aspect, but also DFS is like you can put in $2,500 and you can win real five, six figures money, right? And that's almost impossible to do in sports betting unless you take like a 14-team parlay. That's just never going to happen, right? I mean, so like, where you take the one, you're the one guy that bet the Las Vegas Golden Knights or whatever they're called.
Seriously,
you don't even know, right? That's to win the Stanley Cup, right? I mean, so like, unless you do that, you're never going to win that money. But daily fantasy, you do. But if you get these big pools of people, office pools, NCAA tournament type stuff, you might be able to get some humongous, some humongous game like that, and I think that would be really interesting as well.
I love all this, Pete. I this is super interesting. It's motivated me to read up more about it and get back into it and all that. And I don't know. I'm thinking that you and I are going to have to invent some sort of Wall Street sports thing. Just like quit our day jobs, do this. This is obviously we're mind melded on this idea here. And it's great. But listen, I mean, going from doing what you're doing to becoming a lobbyist and I'll say it. Yeah, you're the guy who made it happen for DFS. It's a big deal, and the new court case is pretty cool, and new frontiers and all that good stuff. And it's fun. So good on you, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Hey, don't I get to say my life lesson?
We don't do the life lesson anymore. But if you want to say a life lesson, you're more than welcome to hit me.
Did I miss that podcast? Did I miss that episode where you killed it?
I never really declared it. I don't know. I've changed the podcast a lot over the years. This podcast has been going on since like the Taft administration. Hit me with your life lesson, Pete Shenke.
Well, it's just as a loyal listener, it's just been gnawing at me for like 2 years. Like, what do I say? What would I say
if I actually got on the podcast? It used to be that at the end of podcasts, I would have people give like what restaurant they like, but it couldn't be like. I was about to say it couldn't be like a, you know, a commonly known restaurant, except they had Daryl Morey on. He goes, I don't know, Chick-fil-A. I was like, yeah, that's a pretty good answer, actually. So whatever.
But well, because you would think of GM's eating at Chick-fil-A, right? You think at that point he's making so much money, he's, I don't know, ordering expensive takeout or something. Or delivery.
Chick-fil-A's politics aside, and that's a whole other story, it is delicious, and I don't know that financial means matters all that much. So fair enough. But yeah, what do you got?
Okay, so well, anyway, for this thing, I guess my life lesson is that, like, politics wise, it actually, you know, doing all this politics, on one hand, it was all about, you know, the money, and just there's so much wrong with politics in the U.S. and being in the, you know, in all these state governments and seeing it in action, you could just kind of see how bad, you know, how the power of the money and the influence, and how,
yeah,
in my opinion, it's just, it's, you know, the powerful and people who have more money, just, you know, that's all that matters, right? And everything is all screwed up. But at the same time, the flip side was that the power of the individual voter is actually really strong. And it's like, in that would be a life lesson. Like, it actually matters. I mean, some of these times, like, I'd be in states and I'd be lobbying a state representative, and they would say, oh, we got a lot of calls on this. We got a lot of emails on this. What's going on with this fantasy sports thing? Huh. And I'd be like, oh, great. And then afterwards, I'd talk to, like, the, you know, their staffer, one of the other lobbyists with, and I'd say, oh, geez, how many emails did they get? I'd be like, oh, they got like five. I could be like, what, five emails? But, like, so few people, you know, reach out to their representatives. And especially on an issue like this, that's maybe not the one that just gets all the attention, you can make a huge difference. I mean, same with showing up for the hearings. Many states, you know, somebody would show up and make a hearing, and you know, and it would make a big difference. So I just would say the life lesson is, like, just get involved. I mean, you would not believe how much of an impact you could actually have for showing up, you know, because I think that one of the reasons our political system is all screwed up is because people just don't show up and don't do stuff. And when you do, it makes a big difference.
Your lack of political cynicism is both inspirational and adorable, Beach. And now I'm going to go watch The West Wing and pretend that nothing that's happening in the world is actually happening. That's what I'm going to do right now. But no, this has been great. Great to catch up with you, man. Keep fighting the good fight. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
All right. Yeah, it's been great. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. So hopefully I don't screw it up and end it all with all my thoughts.
Thanks, Pete.